Okay, we are today talking about Nefesh HaChaim. We're in chapter 22 of Shaar, out of the first gate. And we have to realize what happened. So Moshe Rabbeinu brings the Torah down from heaven. So before that, people could do things. In other words, what does a mitzvah do? The mitzvah has repercussions in the worlds above. So now maybe I can just go straight to the worlds above without doing the mitzvah. Right? For example, let me give you a little example. This is Rav Nachman brings it down. Rav Nachman brings down that when Yaakov Avinu was peeling the sticks, remember he was peeling sticks. Why was he peeling sticks? Because he wanted the sheep to have speckles. So he put the sheep, the sticks in front of them, and they would have children, and they would look at the sticks, and the kids would come out speckled. So that's what happened. So he says when he was peeling the sticks, he did the mitzvah of tefillin. Exactly what we're talking about. In other words, the mitzvah has two parts to it. The mitzvah has the part which is the physical part that you do over here, and the mitzvah has a part which affecting the spiritual worlds and the worlds above. And there's some ways if you can affect the worlds above without doing the mitzvah. For example, how do you do that? So how do we do that today? So we have a general rule, anus rachmana patre. A person who cannot for some reason do the mitzvah, not because they don't want to do it, because they can't, from circumstances, they're patur. That's from a negative mitzvah. But from a positive mitzvah, or a positive mitzvah also, or a positive mitzvah, a person says, I want to do it, even though I can't do it, I want to do it. Hashem makes it as if he did it. Imagine. A person says, you know what? And this is true, say, a person in a situation where they can't pray. Why can't they pray? They're in a hospital bed, and it smells, you can't pray. If it's in a place where it smells, can't pray. So what should a person do when he can't pray? He should think, Hashem, I want to pray. Make it as if I prayed. Hashem says, okay, that's what you want. I'll make it as if you prayed. How can it be? How does that work? And the answer is, without doing the physical action, I can affect the spiritual source of the mitzvah. Right? That's one of the cases we have today. That applies today. That a person can't do the mitzvah. For example, there's many mitzvah in the Torah we can't do today. Which ones? The ones to do with the temple. There's no temple. There's no Beit HaMikdash. There's no temple. Mm-hmm. How do we do the mitzvah? And the answer is, when we learn about the mitzvah, and we think, I wish I could do it, it's like you did it. So we see that a person can affect the source in the heavens of the mitzvah without actually doing the mitzvah. Right? By learning about it and by thinking, I want to do it, a person can fulfill the mitzvah without even doing the mitzvah. Amazing. Amazing power that we have. So it's possible to affect the source, the shoresh, which is the roots of the mitzvah, without actually doing the mitzvah. If a person thinks that they want to do it. However, in prior days, in time of the forefathers, they knew how to affect the source of the mitzvah without doing the mitzvah. They found other ways to do the mitzvah. Now we don't even know, we have no way of knowing this, because these guys were spiritual geniuses. They're much more in tune with the Torah, much more in tune with the roots of the mitzvah than they were with the mitzvah. They weren't mitzvah at that time. They knew what they were trying to do in the worlds above. Today we have no idea what we're doing in the worlds above. So Hashem says, you know what? You don't know what's going on in the worlds above. I'll give you something to do over here which will affect the worlds above automatically. What are these things? Mitzvot. So some mitzvot, we don't know the reasons. What the reasons? And the reasons are, they affect things in the worlds above which we can't even imagine. We have no idea what's going on, but they affect things in the worlds above. So that's very important. The idea of Jewish philosophy is, whatever we do here has a source in the worlds above and affect the worlds above. Whatever we do here in this world affects the worlds above. According to my understanding, the root of my neshama, a person may violate a certain mitzvah or neglect a detail of one of the rabbinic ordinances or change the time of its performance. So, what happens is, the Torah says, not allowed to. Not even a prophet can change a mitzvah. If someone comes along and says, this mitzvah doesn't apply anymore. Who are you? I'm a prophet. Hashem says, no more mitzvah. Don't have to do anymore. We don't listen to him. We're not allowed to subtract from the mitzvah. And the prophet comes on and says, I'm going to give you a new mitzvah. We're not allowed to add to the mitzvah. So this is one of the problems we have with Christianity. Christianity came along and took out everything. Took out all the mitzvot except for loving thy neighbor, love thy neighbor, and a few other mitzvot that you have. And they added mitzvot. Belief in JC. Not mitzvah. There's no mitzvah, belief in JC. So they added mitzvot. They took away mitzvot. And that's our big problem. That's where Christianity and Judaism go their different ways. Judaism says, once the mitzvah were given, we can't change it. The 613 mitzvot, Maybe they don't apply, maybe they do apply, but you can't add to them and you can't subtract from them. You cannot take away and you cannot add. Yes.
Rabbis come up with decrees like you were just saying about before.
Yes.
Purim. Does that have effects on the worlds above?
Coming to it. Oh. Coming to it. Exactly what we're talking about. Exactly. This is where the source of what I got.
Okay.
It's interesting. So this is the source. This is interesting. It's very interesting. So now the forefathers knew how to do the mitzvah without doing the mitzvah. They knew how. Do I need to do the mitzvah today because this thing is done already in the worlds above? The tikkun is already done. Do I need to do another tikkun? Doesn't need to do another tikkun. I don't have to do it. They could see in the worlds above what's going on already. Their souls were so advanced. Their perceptions of the higher worlds were so advanced. We don't see that today. We're blind. We're blind. We don't know what's going on in the world above. And what happened? Hashem gives the Torah and says, you don't have to worry about it anymore. You don't have to worry about the worlds above. You just do your mitzvot. You do your obligations and the worlds above will take care of themselves. And a person comes along and says, today, the worlds above don't need this mitzvah. We don't believe him. He says, I'm a prophet, I can see in the worlds above, you don't need to do the mitzvah. We don't believe you. Sorry, we don't believe you. We don't follow you. Once the Torah was given to us by Moses, Zot HaTorah Asher Sam Moshe Ibn Ibn Israel. This is the Torah that Moshe gave us. That's all we know. We don't know anything else. We're not going to fool around with it. We're not going to add to it. We're going to subtract it. This is the Torah, that's it. So now we have a question. The Gemara in Brachot says, there was a king. The king's name was Chizkiyahu. Chizkiyahu Hezekiah. You heard of him? Chizkiyahu. You heard of him? Chizkiyahu. His name was Chizkiyahu. He's a king of Israel, of Judah. Very, very big tzaddik. Very, very big tzaddik. But he never got married. You know, one of the mitzvot of the Torah is to get married. He never got married. So the prophet Isaiah, Yeshayahu, comes to him and says, you're going to die and you're not going to live. Why double language? You're going to die and you're not going to live. Why the double language?
Correct.
You're going to die in this world and you're not going to live in the next world. Psh! He says, why?
That tell him where he's living, right? You know? He said, go and...
Yes, one second. He looked at the wall. Very good. So what happened was, one second. So why did he tell him he's going to die and he's not going to live? He's losing both worlds. He's going to die in both worlds. He said, but listen. The reason why I'm not going to get married is because I know my son is going to be evil. He's going to be a big rasha. And Yeshayahu said, it's not up to you. The mitzvah is to get married. You have a mitzvah. You don't think about the future. You just do your obligation. That's it. You can't even come along and question the obligation. Imagine. We have obligations. You say, well, what about this? What about this? What will happen if I do this? What will happen if I do this? It's a mitzvah. Mitzvah is, you do it. That's it. So he did. So what happened was, Yeshayahu says, you're going to die. He said, not so fast. Number one is, I'll get married. You have a daughter, and you're a tzaddik. With my merit and your merit, our children will be tzaddikim. So he married Yeshayahu, the prophet's daughter. He married the daughter, and his son was still evil. He had two sons, Rav Shake and Menashe. I don't know where he got these strange names from. It says one day they were sitting on his back. Do you know the story? They were sitting on his shoulders. And he had a very bald head. Hezekiah had a very bald head. And he heard them talking to each other. One brother said, our father's head is, we can make a nice idol and put it on his head. We can bring an offering to the idol on his head. Because it's a nice smooth head, we can bring an idol and offering to his head. So he heard this and he threw them down. One son died, Rav Shake died, and Menashe survived. Menashe became the king of Judah and worst king we ever had. But what we see from the story is, even though you know that the future is not good, if you do the mitzvah, you got to do the mitzvah. The person's going to do the mitzvah. And
what happens with the people who have babies?
They can't help it. But you try. You have to try.
Yeah.
The person's going to try their best. Today, it's much easier. Today, you have all these technologies. And many people can't have babies today. But there's the test tubes and this and that. There's all sorts of... But a person's going to try their best. So a person says, you know what? I can't get married. You know what? I can't find a wife. Did you try? I'm trying all the time. That's all Hashem wants. Hashem says, you tried, that's it. But he wasn't trying. He was going out of his way not to get married. That's the problem. So people are going, yeah, today I have a lot of singles today. I'm trying. I'm going out with this one, I'm going out with that one. I'm trying. I'm spending money here. So Hashem says, okay, that's all I want. Right? Sometimes it doesn't click. Sometimes you have to say yes even if it doesn't click. Well, it doesn't always click, you know. There's something wrong with a clicker. You know, sometimes it doesn't click. Yeah.
Science, you know, for...
But they have to try. What do you mean they can't? They don't try.
But it,
No, the mitzvah is to do it personally, physically. It's got to be physical. There's a machlok, there's a big debate if it's not done physically, if it's a mitzvah. The man has a mitzvah to be with a woman. It's a mitzvah.
Maybe you don't know who he is.
Also. But the mitzvah is through the body. It's a mitzvah on the body. It's not a mitzvah on something else. For example, let me give you an example. There's a mitzvah for, a man to wear tefillin, right? So now he says, you know what, today I don't feel like it. Can you do it for me? Does that work?
No.
No, it's a mitzvah on his body. So same thing, a man has to have a child. It's a mitzvah on his body. It's a mitzvah on the woman. So you can't do it through someone else. You can't do it through a test tube. It's got to be through the person. But if you can't, you can't. But the person's got to try their best to do it naturally. It's a very important, big mitzvah. It's a very big. So he said, no, I'm not going to get married. You know why? I'm going to see. I see. I'm a prophet. I can see my children are evil. He says, you're going to die in this world and you're not going to live in the next world. You're going to lose both worlds. Look at this. Why? We're not allowed to question the mitzvah. So even though a person thinks, I know the reason for the mitzvah, it doesn't apply to me. What if it doesn't apply to you? Unless the halacha says it doesn't apply to you, it applies to you. So the deeper reasons for the mitzvah, look at this, it's amazing. It's like Rav Chaim Volozhin. It says, only Adam HaRishon knew the reasons for the mitzvah. How do we know? How do we know he knew the reasons for the mitzvah? Because this is the Midrashim, they talk about the wine that was made from the 6 days and left for the righteous. Remember that? It's the Midrash. It says the wine that was made during the 6 days of creation. And what does that mean? The wine that is made was made 6 days of creation, left for the righteous. He says this is the knowledge of the reasons for the mitzvot. Don't take it literally. It's wine. Or it says Adam Rishon was able to see from one end of the world to the other end of the world. What does that mean? It means he could see the reasons for the mitzvot. That's what it means. He could see the worlds above. He could see reasons for the mitzvot. But after Adam Rishon, no one else can see it. No one else can know it. So we have to do what God says. That's it. So in the days where there was prophecy in Israel, the prophet cannot come along and make up a new law. He can make up a new law which is temporary, but not permanent. For example, Eliyahu Navi, Elijah the prophet, right? Elijah the prophet. All the Jews were worshipping idols. One of the biggest idols was a thing called Baal Zevuv. You know what Baal Zevuv is? The Lord of the Flies. They would have gold flies. You ever seen those things? If you go to the Israel Museum in Jerusalem, amazing. They have a whole room full of idols. It's not good that they have that, but see what they did. How people used to worship these things. You see the small flies they used to make like a necklace. And they would kiss it like a cross, basically. Kiss it, bow down to it. This is their god, the fly. The god of flies. Amazing. Baal Zevuv. And all, imagine, most of the Jews worshipped the Baal. And there was only a few. He was the only prophet. There were 400 prophets of Baal. And he was the only prophet of God. And he made a duel. He said, listen, let's build altars on Mount Carmel, near Haifa. Build the altars. I'll build an altar to God. You build an altar to Baal. We'll bring the cow. We'll cut the cow. And if the fire comes from heaven, it proves that who's God. So he said, you go first. So the prophets of Baal are there all day praying. Send fire, send fire, send fire. He tells him, he says, maybe your God is deaf. Shout louder, shout louder. So he starts screaming, God, help us, Baal, Baal, help us. Nothing happened. He says, okay, it's my turn now. Okay, bring water. He pours water all over. Water, more water, more water. It's all wet. Hashem, please. Straight away the fire came. Phew, burned the offering. Amazing. Everyone said, Hashem Hu Elokim. What we say over here, Hashem Hu Elokim, on Yom Kippur. They said twice. God is God, God is God. And that lasted one day. But we see over here, because in those days, you're not allowed to bring an offering outside the temple. When the temple was built, you can't bring offerings anyway. And he brought an offering outside the temple. How come? And the answer is the prophet has the power to do a temporary mitzvah. Not forever. But you can't make a mitzvah forever. So the question we have is, how do the rabbis make Purim? We're not allowed to come along and invent a mitzvah. They've got to find a way that the Torah itself says to make a mitzvah. So that's what we were learning earlier. The Gemara says in Megillah, Daf Yud Daled, the rabbis made what's called a kal vechomer. If it's like this in an easy place, how much more so in a stricter place will be like this? So, for example, we celebrate Pesach. What is Pesach? The Jews were slaves in Egypt. And then we became free. We celebrate. What do? They sang a song. Az Yashim Moshe. Sing the song we sing every Shabbat. It's actually the Siddur every morning. Every morning we sing the song Az Yashim Moshe B'nai Yisrael in parts of the Shacharit. They sang a song because before they were slaves and now they're free. So the Gemara says, if we're just singing a song because we were slaves and now we're free, how much more so if we were going to be killed and we were saved? We have to sing a song. Right? If from slavery to freedom we have to sing, how much more so from death to life we have to sing? We were saved from death. So we have to celebrate as well. So that's the rabbi saw this and made Purim. If we celebrate Pesach, which is from slavery to freedom, how much more so we have to celebrate when we're saved from death? That's Purim. That's what they saw. So we have to have a reason. You can't just make a new mitzvah without a reason. It has to be a proper reason. So even the prophets could not make a mitzvah forever without a reason. So Purim is based on this concept of a Kal Vachomer, on this idea they saw Pesach and they said, if we have to celebrate Pesach, then we definitely have to celebrate Purim. Okay, so the rabbis have to find a basis for the law. You can't just come along and make a mitzvah of Hanukkah. You have to find a basis in the Torah. You can't come along. You can't just make laws with no reasons. So when a Jew does a mitzvah, it has a benefit to themselves, has a benefit to their souls, has a benefit to the worlds above as well. It has a benefit to everything around you. Imagine. The Rambam says, when a Jew does a mitzvah, if the world is like this, good and bad, every mitzvah pushes it to the side of good. Your mitzvah could keep the whole world going, because you push the world on a high level. So now the world before was, he says, when a person thinks about their lives, they have to think the world is half and half, good and bad. When I do more good, it pushes it to the side of good. When I do more bad, it pushes that side of bad. So everything I do has an effect on the world. It's hard to see. Now what am I doing? It's like every sound you make has an effect. What's it called? There's a theory. What theory is that?
Butterfly
theory. The butterfly flies. The wind of the butterfly eventually will be magnified and become a storm. 2,000 miles away. Everything we do has an effect. It's called cause and effect. Everything we do has cause and effect. So too in the spiritual world. Everything we do spiritually has an effect on the world above, even in this world. So a person's going to do all the mitzvot. That's the bottom line. Bottom line is a person's going to do all the mitzvot. And just by doing the mitzvah, even though we don't know how it works, has an effect on the world above. Every mitzvah has an effect of holiness and spiritual light and creates worlds in the worlds above and helps this world as well. Okay, so the great Kabbalists, like the Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai was the Kabbalist who ran away from the Romans. There were three rabbis over there who were discussing the Romans. So Rabbi Huda Bar Yochai said the Romans are the best. You know why? They make beautiful roads. They make beautiful marketplaces. We have a place like a mall. There have been malls, the roads, beautiful. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai said, they made roads to collect the tolls. And they made money, they made the marketplace for another reason. We don't talk about it. Okay, so that's what they made money. It wasn't for good for us. It was for bad for us. They had bad intentions when they did it. And Rabbi Yossi was there, he was quiet. The Romans heard about this conversation. And they said, Rabbi Yehuda, who said good about us, he was going to be the first speaker. And every time there's a Jewish gathering, Rabbi Yehuda is the speaker. He's the main speaker. He has to talk. Because he's saying good things about Rome. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, who spoke bad about us, we're going to kill him. We made a decree to kill him. And Rabbi Yossi kept quiet. He's going to be exiled to a different place. So Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai quickly ran away with his son, Rabbi Lazar, and they hid in a cave in Piki'in, a place called Piki'in. You can go today and see the cave. And it says a carob tree grew out there and a stream. And they were sustained over there. They lived over there inside the cave for 12 years. Imagine. They were in a cave for 12 years, and they were studying Torah all day. So he got an understanding over there in that cave. He got an understanding of Kabbalah. He became the biggest Kabbalist the world has seen, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. And he understood all the hidden matters of the Holy Torah. So his students and eventually the big Kabbalist, the Arizal, They taught us about the hidden reasons for the mitzvah. So everyone can have an idea. Now we have an idea, at least a little idea of what our mitzvah do in the worlds above. We have some idea today. By studying these books, we can understand. But the truth is, these things happen whether we know about them, they don't know about them. They increase holiness in the world. When a person does a mitzvah, we're increasing holiness and spirituality in the world. So that is the bottom line. The bottom line is, whether we know about it, we don't know about it, do it. Because when you do it, it's happening. I'm creating spirituality and holiness in the world. The Torah says, we say in the Shema every day, Ve'ahavta et Adonai Elohecha. You love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your might. Right? We love God. So we have to love God with our heart and serve God. Well, how do we serve God with our heart? What is service of the heart? The rabbis say it's tefillah, prayer. How does a person serve God with their heart? It means when a person prays, the heart is full of love. And the love overflows. It's like when a person loves their parents. Your heart is overflowing with love. I love you, mommy. I love you, daddy. I love you, mommy. I love you, daddy. So Hashem, also when we're praying to Hashem, we're telling Hashem, Hashem, we love you. We love you. We love you. We love you. So that's a love. The love causes a person to speak and express themselves. So our prayers involve the heart, and our prayers involve our souls. That's the part we can't see. The prayers also involve the souls. Why? Because the soul is the intellect, the mind. When a person's mind is somewhere, we said that's where the soul is. When your mind is in something, sometimes we learn Torah and our mind is not in it. We just say the words. So we said it's three different levels, right? We said the nefesh is action, the ruach is speech, and the neshama is thoughts. So when a person's thoughts are not there, his neshama is not there. The higher parts of the soul are not there. So the bottom line is, the thoughts are part of the tefillah. For your soul to be part of your tefillah, your thoughts have to be part of the tefillah. So you're right, the guy is praying, that means the actions, he's moving his lips. And he's saying the words, so the ruach is there. But without the mind there, the neshama's not there, the soul's not there, the main part of the soul is not there. So a person has to pray with his heart. How do you pray with your heart? So number one is love. Number two is concentration. Two things. So how does a person get to that level of thought? It's very hard, because when a person prays, distractions, distracted. He's thinking about this. It's so hard. You think about this. All of a sudden, it's amazing, because it's a very good meditation. It's a very good way to calm the mind. Why? Because I don't have time to think. Most people don't have time to think. They don't sit down to think. They're always distracted. Watch TV, watch this. They run here, run there, run this. They have no time to think. When a person prays, all of a sudden they have time to think. But instead of thinking about God, they start thinking about what the other things. They start getting carried away. It's very important to focus on the prayers. How does a person focus on the prayers? Look inside the book and read the words and point to the words and think about the words. Most people just read the words and eventually it becomes like a habit. And it becomes like a mantra. You just say the words over and over again, but there's no thought inside. So it's very important to have the thoughts in the prayers. The person's got to have their heart, which is love of God, and the soul, which is the thoughts of God. So praying with the heart, number one, a person's got to get rid of all the bad thoughts. All the other thoughts in his head, he's got to get rid of. It's very hard. Before a person prays, they're going to try and remove all the garbage from their heads and concentrate on the words of prayer. Now, it's like an angel. You're going to be like an angel. It's very hard to pray. It's very, very hard for a person. I don't think I've prayed a single prayer in my life from beginning to end without losing concentration. It's practically impossible. So the rabbis say, you know what, at least the first paragraph. At least the first paragraph with complete concentration. So that's the minimum. A person can do more, obviously, every day try and do a little bit more. Try and vary it. This today I'll have concentrate on this paragraph. Today I'll concentrate on this paragraph. There are 19 blessings. Every day you can think of a different blessing. But at least the first paragraph has to be said with total concentration. So it's very important. So to get rid of all the other thoughts in the one's head and focus on the heart, and also first got to know which way to aim the prayers. We were talking about in the Shmoneh Esrei, in the Shulchan Aruch, we were talking about how a person's going to think before they pray. My prayers are going towards Israel. and my prayers are going towards Jerusalem, and my prayers are going towards the temple, and my prayers are going towards the Holy of Holies. And the person thinks like that. The person should think, I'm now moving myself to Israel. Before you pray. It's like teleporting. You teleport yourself. I am now in Israel. And now I'm now going to be in Yerushalayim. And now I'm going to be in the temple. Oh, that's a different ballgame. Imagine yourself in the temple. Imagine yourself in the Holy of Holies. Wow. Only the high priest can go in the Holy of Holies. But without prayers, our prayers can go in the Holy of Holies. Because our prayers are aimed to the Holy of Holies. So it's very powerful. And a person is going to think, I'm praying to God. I'm not praying to anything else. I'm not praying to anyone else. I'm directing my heart to Hashem. I'm praying straight to Hashem. And who was the champion of prayer? Hannah. Hannah was the mother of the prophet Shmuel. Hannah was the mother of the prophet Shmuel, Samuel. Samuel the prophet. And it says over there, she was speaking in her heart. She was speaking in her heart means she had a fully concentration. Her mind was totally occupied with love of God and focusing on God.
That's why it's in the book, right? That's why it's in the book.
Yes. In the Siddur it says, we have the prayer book. In the Sephardic prayer book, they have all, at the beginning of the Sephardic prayer book, it's Vatitpalel Chana. The whole story of Vatitpalel Chana, how she prayed for her son, Shmuel, who became the biggest prophet. Big prophet. And also, David HaMelech says, Bechol libi dirashticha, I search for you with all my heart. So it's very important to search for God with all one's heart. Focus oneself completely to God. Number two, a person who prays should wait until they feel like praying. Only trouble is, if we wait till we feel like praying, we'll never pray. When do we feel like praying? When we need something. And that's the difference between a wealthy person and a poor person. A poor person always needs something. So who are you going to get it from? Hashem. That's why David HaMelech was the closest to Hashem. Why is David HaMelech closest to Hashem? He's the most needy person. Right? When he was young, a baby, he was in the field with looking after the sheep. It's crazy. Can you imagine? You have the lions, the tigers, he's all praying to God all the time. Then when he got older, and they recognized him as a great warrior, the king got jealous of him, and he was on the run from the king. King Saul was trying to kill him. Praying to God, God help me, God help me, save me this. And the Palestinians, the Philistines are also trying to kill him. Save me. He's the most needy person, but that's how he got close to God. So a person's got to use their needs and their wants and their desires and use it to get close to Hashem. We all need something. There's no such thing as a person in this world who does not need anything. Everyone needs something. Right? So a person has money, but he doesn't have health. He has health, but he doesn't have happiness. He doesn't have happiness, but he doesn't have children. He has children, he doesn't have a wife. Everyone has something. Everyone has a need. So use that need and pray to God. I'll tell you what happened to me when I was a kid. You don't appreciate prayers. What happens? So what happened is, I really wanted to go to Israel in my summer. I really wanted to go to Israel in my summertime. And it didn't work out. And my mother said, poor next year. I've never prayed so much in my life like I prayed then. I wanted to go, Hashem, I want to go to Israel. I want to go to Israel. I mean, you have to open the doors. So I went the next year, but it was a different thing. Like, you need something, you want something badly, and you can't get it. So what else can you do? You can only do is pray. That's all you can do is pray. So a person should use what we don't have as a vehicle to get close to God. And that's the reason why we don't have it. Very simple. Hashem says, you're not praying enough. I'll give you a reason to pray. I'll make you pray. You need to pray. We need to pray. But how do you pray? And the answer is, you've got to focus. So obviously a person who needs something is going to be more focused than a person who doesn't need anything. I need it. Look at Hannah. She wanted a child so badly. And her husband said, don't worry, Hannah. You're better to me than 10 children. I don't care if I have children for you or not. You're better to... She said, no, I want to have children for me, not for you, for me. So a person should pray when they need something. And use that need. The truth is, we need something every day. And the rabbis made it pray three times a day. So a person's got to find the need. So say, Shacharit, I prayed for this. find something else to pray for mincha. So find something else to pray for arvit, or for pray for the same thing. Well, you didn't get answered. Pray for the same thing, or pray for a sick person who, you know, today in Israel there was a terrorist incident. Two people got really badly wounded. So there's always something to pray for. You can't pray for yourself. Pray for someone else. Everyone, there's always someone in need. A person should focus on the greatness of God when they're praying. When a person focuses on the greatness of God, the soul goes up to Hashem. Okay, so that's a beautiful prayer. When a person focuses their mind, puts their love into it, and is also focusing on Hashem, is higher than everything else. I'm going up to Hashem. I'm going up to meet Hashem. You're climbing the ladder to Hashem. That's what the ladder, Jacob's ladder. Prayer is the ladder to Hashem. We climb up the ladder by praying to Hashem. Okay, I'm going to stop here. And next week we'll talk about Tefillah.